Hello, F1 Explains fans. It's Christian here with a bit of exciting news before we get started on this week's episode. I can exclusively reveal that we are doing a live F1 Explains show in Miami, and you can be part of it. Of course you can be part of it. We will be at the Miami Grand Prix on Friday, May the 3rd, when we will be live on stage with the legend, the F1 rock star, Gunter Steiner, former Haas team principal and star, of course, of Netflix Drive to Survive. Now, if you've got a ticket for the Miami Grand Prix, you can come and see us at no extra cost. And you can even ask Gunter a question on the show. Email it to f1explains@f1.com. Let us know if you're coming, and you might end up being part of our show. You can ask Gunter a question even if you're not coming, but we particularly want to hear from you if you're going to be at the Miami Grand Prix. Here are the details then. The show starts at 1:40 on Friday afternoon. The podcast stage is on the north side of the 300 level inside the Hard Rock Stadium. It's near the Red Bull Pit Stop Challenge. It's also marked on the map on the official F1 Miami app. We'll put all of this information in the episode description as well. So that is F1 Explains Live at the Miami Grand Prix with Gunter Steiner, Friday the 3rd of May at 1:40. Send us your question for Gunter to f1explains@f1.com, and we hope to see you there. Now enjoy this week's episode.
What makes a Formula One car the fastest in the world around a racetrack? The powerful hybrid engine? The physics-busting downforce? The grippy, slick tires?
Yeah, but also the things that make it stop.
Ah, the brakes. F1 brakes are absolutely astonishing. They bring the cars from insane speeds on the straights to slightly less insane speeds through the corners, and they do it so quickly in such a short distance. The only thing more impressive than how an F1 car accelerates is how it decelerates.
So, on that bombshell, welcome to F1 Explains F1 Brakes. I'm Christian Hugill. That is Katie Osborne, and this is the official Formula One podcast dedicated to answering your questions about the sport. Ask us anything you like, so long as it's Formula One related. Send those questions to f1explains@f1.com. You can use a keyboard or your phone to write some words, or you can use your vocal cords to send a voice note, like these guys did.
Hi, it's Julie in Austin, Texas. My husband Randall has been watching F1 since the 1970s. And we have both been to every Grand Prix at COTA.
Hi, Christian and Katie. I'm Bara from South Africa, a big F1 fan.
Bonjour, Katie and Christian. I'm Arthur from France. Love the pod.
We'd like to hear more about F1 braking systems. How do they actually work?
I'm curious about F1 car parts. Which parts of a Formula One car are replaced during a season? My immediate thought goes to the brakes. Are they replaced every race?
I'd like to know more about brakes, brake balance to be specific. How exactly does the brake balance function work on a Formula One car? And also, how can it be applied by the driver? Thank you.
Merci, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. We love your podcast.
Ooh,
can I just say,
fun.
Can I just say, I love this podcast and I love our listeners. The fact they are from all over the world blows my mind. The fact they are so engaged in the sport, and we've been doing this podcast coming up to a year, and they're asking about brake balance and things. Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much to Julie, Arta, and Barrett for getting in touch there. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I love the fact that they are all curious about the same topic from all over the world, right? Like, it's so, I'm blown away, and I had goosebumps because, yes, I get goosebumps a lot when I get really excited about this stuff. And this was something that excited me. We also had an email on this from John in Edmonton, Canada. Brakes are such an interesting topic. The unsung hero and or maybe the secret weapon of an F1 car. How do brakes work? What are they made of? How often are they replaced? How hot do they get? We are going to get the answers from an engineer from Brembo, the company that makes brakes for every F1 team.
You can take less than 120, 130 meters to reduce the speed from 300 to zero.
Yeah, the technology is fascinating. The technique is amazing too. How the drivers brake, how it feels when they hit the pedal, the superhuman strength and control they need to slow a car from 200 miles per hour down to sometimes just 40 or 50 on really tight corners. Alpine reserve driver Jack Doohan will explain all that.
Think about almost your eyes, your organs, your bones, everything just rushing forward to the front of your body. Everything wanting to almost come straight through because you have onwards from 5Gs just being pushed straight forward. And also your neck wanting to fly out. It's an outrageous feeling.
Before we go any further, Christian, here are a couple of things about F1 brakes. Like an automatic road car, F1 cars only have two pedals, the accelerator throttle gas pedal on the right and then the brake on the left. F1 drivers accelerate with their right foot and then they brake with their left. Using one foot on each pedal is faster than swapping between. Do you do that when you drive your car?
What, swap?
Yeah.
No, when I'm driving my car, I only use the left foot for the clutch or it just stays there and does nothing if it's automatic. And I only ever used the right. But when I was racing, yes, I was left foot, right foot. Yeah. And Katie, would you like to know a brake-based fact from the brain of producer Chris that I didn't know?
Yes, why, of course I would.
I'm glad you said yes. There was a time in the late 1990s, I had no idea of this, when McLaren experimented with a secret second brake pedal. I know. One for each side of the car. They believed it would help them go around corners more quickly. They had some...
I wonder why.
Yeah, well, they had some success with it. And you can find out why, Katie, because there's an episode of the award-winning F1 podcast series, F1 on the Edge. We'll put in that it's award-winning because producer Chris made it. All about McLaren's secret pedal. The second brake pedal was banned. So now every car in the grid only has one. But if you want to listen to that, go back and search for F1 on the Edge.
Wait, that is so... I have so many questions.
They're all answered on that podcast. It won an award, Katie.
That is so fascinating. Thank you for the factoid, Chris. And every car on the grid has brakes designed and manufactured by the Italian company Brembo.
Yeah, they send engineers to every race. Andrea Algeri is one of them. He's Brembo's F1 market manager. And when we did this interview, he was in the F1 paddock. So do excuse the helicopters flying by and racing cars driving around.
Here he is. Talking to Christian.
Andrea, a very warm welcome to F1 Explains. Lovely to have you with us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you to you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. There's so much we could get into with the world of brakes, Andrea. Tell me to start with, how are Formula One brakes different to the brakes you and I might use when we're driving our road cars?
Okay, the main difference are the material. So the disc and pads are normally cast iron disc on the standard road cars. Here we are speaking about a disc made by carbon-carbon. Carbon-carbon is a special material that allow you to be very lightweight. But on top of that, you can basically dissipate a lot of energy that are pushed in the brakes during the deceleration. So you are able to transform the very high speed in thermal energy through this kind of material.
Talk to me through the performance numbers a little bit, Andrea, because let's take a Formula One circuit like Baku, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, where there is this enormous long straight. Even people like me who drive it on the PlayStation wonder if it's ever going to end. It's huge. And then there's an incredibly tight corner at the end of this long straight. How quickly and in what distance can an F1 car go from sort of full speed around 320 kilometers an hour, just over 200 miles an hour, to zero, to a really harsh braking zone like that turn one into the Azerbaijan Grand Prix?
Yeah, basically, if you have to dissipate 300 kilometers per hour, for example, from 350 to 50 kilometers per hour, it takes 2.5 seconds for a Formula One car. So if you can make a parallel between the acceleration of this kind of car, the power that you can dissipate through the brakes is far higher than the power that you get from the acceleration. So it's in terms of horsepower, the power that you dissipate during the braking is very, very high and almost double, if not more, compared to the power that you need for accelerate the car. So we normally use horsepower and the power in general of an engine as a, let's say, as a reference, but in terms of brakes, we are far over this kind of numbers.
So it sounds, from what you've said, forgive me, for I am the least scientific person in the world, Andrea, which is amazing how I'm presenting a Formula One podcast, but there we are. It sounds to me like the drivers can brake quicker than they can accelerate. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. This is one of the biggest, let's say, impression when a new driver comes to a Formula One car. You can imagine that, for example, on a very sportive car with a very nice tire, when you hit the brake very hard, the deceleration could be around 1.2, 1.3 G. This means that, you can imagine jumping on a very sportive car, a GT, what do you see normally on the car? You have this kind of deceleration. When you release the throttle on a Formula One car, this kind of deceleration, you get this kind of deceleration just from the aero contribution of the car. So it means that without touching the brake, you are already braking more than a very sportive car with the best tire that you have. On top of that, you add the power of the carbon and our brakes, basically. So you arrive to values like 6G or 5-6G, like in Baku or similar track.
Are there distances you can put on it? So is there a distance that a Formula One car can go from 320-odd kilometres an hour to nothing? Or is there a time?
Let's say the time is more... time and distance are correlated. It really depends on two main factors. The tyre that you have, so how soft is the tyre and the grip.
Sure.
Regarding that particular tarmac with the tyre compound. And also the aero layout, let's say the aero setup that you have on the car, because the more downforce you have, the more you can put the braking torque on the ground and you are able to decelerate quicker, basically. So there is not a precise, space and time for a given braking, but it really depends on the circuit and also the setup of the car in terms of aerodynamic, the wings, and so on. But in general, you can take less than 120, 130 meters to reduce the speed from 300 to zero.
Incredible. You mentioned the material they were made from earlier. Mm-hmm. Just talk to us a little bit about that. Is that the sort of material that we in normal life would see anywhere else? Or are these completely unique to Formula One, these brakes?
In terms of disc and pads, so I mean the carbon material is really different from what we have in standard brakes application for the standard roads. It's used in many different series in the sporting cars, but in Formula One is the top end of this material, and as I said before, it's very light and is able to dissipate a lot of energy. It is basically constructed with a very long process that give you that start from carbon fiber, let's say, with a particular layup, and then you cook this kind of carbon and densify the fiber with other carbon coming from gas in a special oven, and it takes weeks if not months to get the right density. At the end of the process, you get a sort of big donuts that you can machine on the preferred shape, considering also the request from the team. So you drill all the holes for the cooling, you can machine a special shape to get the part assembled on the car, and coupled with the titanium bells that go, near the wheel to stop the car, basically. I don't want to be too complicated in explaining this, but if you want, I can go deep in the details.
Andrea, I'm with you, and if I understand, there's a good chance our listeners understand too, because as I say, I'm not the most technically minded of men. I struggle to put up a shelf.
Okay.
Let's look at, and speaking of the technical aspects of it, how are they designed and tested Formula One brakes?
Okay, let's say in Formula One there is a lot of change between one season to the other. So we normally get the feedback from the first part of the season from the drivers and the teams. And during summer, basically we start the design of the new brakes for the following season, getting advice and needs from the driver or let's say the team in general. And there is a period of co-design between Brembo and the team. We define together the best caliper or disc design that the team would like to develop for the following season. And in this way, we can get basically to the final design, freeze the design. And after that, it takes a few weeks to produce all the parts that are normally tested on our dyno. That is a dyno bench that is able to simulate all the stress the Formula One car can put on the brakes. And then there is maybe a period of testing during the end of the season test, for example, or during the winter test. And then you can use it for all the season, let's say. Then the caliper is made by aluminium and it lasts long, several races. While the disc and the pads are consumable, so after one or two races, you scrap it and you use the new ones, basically. So the caliper stay the same for hopefully all the season if there is no update during the season, while the disc and pads are changed, basically, on race basis.
To pick you up on that, Andrea, and also bring in one of our listeners' questions, we get listeners send us questions from all over the world. If you're listening to this, you can do that too. F1explains@f1.com is the email address. We got the same question from Julie and Randall, and they both want to know what actually happens when a driver presses the brake pedal. How do the brakes actually work, and whether or not it's an electronic brake by wire system? Because you used the term there, Andrea, caliper. So as well as answering Julie and Randall's question and explaining it to idiots like me, how exactly does a brake work? What exactly is a caliper and everything you mentioned there?
Okay, let's say in general, the driver can push a pedal, that is the brake pedal. This is linked to a master cylinder, a sort of pump, that builds pressure inside an hydraulic circuit. This hydraulic circuit moves some pistons inside the caliper. So the caliper, the caliper piston, are pushed against the pads. The pads are pushed against the disc that rotates with the wheels, and the friction between pads and disc generate some temperature, and this is the process that you are where you are transforming the kinetic energy, say the speed, into the thermal energy, so the temperature that you get from disc and pads. And this is the general, let's say, behavior of a standard disc, that is a road car or a very sportive car or even a Formula One. So you move basically some hydraulic fluid, that is the braking fluid in our case, to, let's say, move to build up pressure and let move piston pads against the disc.
Arta is in France, another wonderful listener who's emailed us, f1explains@f1.com. Arta asks, how often are each car's brakes replaced? Something you briefly touched upon earlier, Andrea.
Yeah. Okay, as I told you, disc and pads have a life that really depends on the level of the teams. Some teams are basically changing them every race. So they use one set of disc brake and disc pad for every race. They normally do like this. So they use the first set for the first weekend, then the following one during free practice, they use the set used in the previous race, and then they fit new disc and pad starting from FP3, qualifying race, and then this set is kept also for the free practice of the following event. But so this means that basically every race they have a new set, something like 800, 1000 kilometer for set. Smaller teams, they can use our brakes even longer, up to two or three races. It really depends on the wear that you have on the car and the
that are linked to the design of the disc and pad cooling pattern, because we have some spec that can allow you to run longer because the cooling is lower and the wear that you can make on the disc and pad is bigger. On the other side, you know, the top team are, let's say, less, they use more the material to get fresh stuff every weekend and get the best performance. The calipers have a total life of 10,000 kilometers, so they last long, many races. But we require to send back the caliper in Brembo after 2,500 kilometers to get a full service, change some consumable parts like seals and small bits that we have inside the caliper, check deeply all the caliper body, make our own measurement, taking note of some degradation of the performance and so on. But generally, they don't have any problem if not involved in an accident or very high temperature moments, let's say.
And to ask a double-headed question, Andrea, are the brakes the same? So, for example, are the Haas team using the same brakes as the Ferrari team, as the McLaren team, as the Williams team? And are those brakes the same race by race? So again, I mentioned Azerbaijan earlier, which is particularly harsh on the brakes given that long straight. Is it the same brakes that will be used at Monaco to at Hungary?
Okay, let's say that in terms of disc and pads, it's easier to have different spec, mainly related to the track duty. So go in Monza with some spec, in Baku with the same spec mainly, and in Monaco with another one. Normally that is able to dissipate more energy and more temperature. The caliper are the same for all the season. So one team use the same caliper design from the beginning of the season until the end, unless you have some update during the season. But I have to underline that all the teams use different different parts. So what we design for Red Bull or is different from the Ferrari caliper. From what we design for Haas is different for example Williams. And this is the difficult part of our job, because as you told you before, we supply basically 10 teams, all the 10 teams with different parts. So the number of projects that we have to run during the summer period is quite high, because front and rear caliper are different. We have a master cylinder, we have BBW, we have different spec of discs and shape of pads. So you can imagine the number of projects that we have to run, different part number, the logistic also behind this kind of things is quite complicated. And you have very short time to realize all the pieces, because let's say from summer to the first delivery it takes a few months, and we have to be quite quick to follow the indication coming from the teams.
I bet you do, busy people. And is that simply because, you know, for example, Williams' car will behave characteristically different to Alpine's car, and therefore when they put together their shopping list for you, are they saying we want it to break in a slightly different way because of the characteristics of our car? Is that why it's different from team to team?
Yes, correct. The approach that they take can be different for, let's say, the approach that they get to the general project of the car. Someone asks for a very lightweight brake system, compromising a bit the stiffness. That is something that the driver can feel in the pedal. So you have a, let's say, less stiff pedal, a bit less stiff pedal. Others are paying some mass to get the stiffer possible braking system to allow the driver to get a strong pedal, a very stiff pedal, and let's say braking following its driving style, basically. So the requests are quite different. And also in terms of cooling strategy, I have to say that in the last period we see crazy shapes coming from different input of the team that can cool down the braking system with very different concepts.
It's fascinating. And one of the things I love about Formula One, Andrea, is it brings together world-class people in so many ways. And it's lovely to be able to shine a light on those different people on this podcast, you know, world-class providers of things like brakes that we all take for granted watching Formula One. But actually, there's a team of people like yourself making them the very best in the world. So thank you for what you do, Andrea, and thank you for shining a light on the brakes. The next time we see a driver lock up, the next time we see two drivers going head-to-head into a corner and trying to outbrake each other, we'll have an even better understanding of what they're doing and how they've got there, thanks to yourself. So really appreciate it, Andrea. Thanks for coming on to F1 Explains.
Thank you to you for having me, and it was a pleasure also for me. Thank you.
Andrea, we'll now put the brakes on the interview. I'm sorry.
Okay, very good. Thank you, guys.
So now we know that every F1 team's brakes are made by Brembo, but they're all very different. They are not a stock part. That's a really good critical point to know. One team might request something different from another. I didn't realize that. That surprises me. And those numbers, F1 brakes can slow a car down from 300 kilometers per hour, which is 186 miles per hour, to zero in 120 meters or 400 feet. Just visualize that for one moment, right? Let's think about that. I'm speaking from an American. 186 miles per hour to zero in 400 feet. That's bonkers.
Well, we did a whole episode on why you should go to an F1 race. Scroll back into last season to listen to that. That's one of the things I think you only get from seeing Formula One cars in person. The energy in the back of the car, you see the cars sort of try to move, but because of the brilliant engineering, they don't move. And watching the energy go through the car as it slows is something quite incredible. So I agree, to visualize it is something quite special. We're on a one-stop strategy, so it's time for us to box. Jack Doohan up next. This is F1 Explains. We're explaining F1 brakes. Now, you might be listening to us thinking, I've been in a car. I know what it feels like to slam on the brakes. Well, trust us, it is nothing compared to how it feels in an F1 car.
Yeah, don't take our word for it. Take Jack Doohan's word for it. He's Alpine's reserve driver. He's done hundreds of testing laps around Monza, one of the hardest braking circuits on the F1 calendar. So he knows exactly how impressive the brakes on an F1 car really are. He took a break, but I'm ching, to tell us about it.
Very good. Yeah, very good. I thought I did the rubbish jokes on this podcast. Jack Doohan, welcome back to F1 Explains. Appearance 2 for you on the podcast.
It is. You know, it's been a long time since, so I'm glad to be back.
Lovely to have you back. Jack, describe the feeling when you hit a brake pedal in a Formula One car. It looks spectacular from the outside. What's it like on the inside?
Think about everything on the outside of your body, from your fingernails to the outlays of your skin to your hair. When you brake, you're strapped in the car, you know, to the point where you may as well be built a part of the chassis, a part of the car. So all of that obviously stays intact. But think about almost your eyes, your organs, your bones, everything just rushing forward to the front of your body, everything wanting to almost come straight through because you have, you know, onwards from 5Gs just being pushed straight forward, and also your neck wanting to fly out, you know, straight over the front of the car. But luckily that's why we have a hands device and we're kept very safe. But the sensation is that you can almost come to a complete stop, and it's not like stopping in a road car where you might have the little bit of a jolt of your neck at the latter part of braking because someone slammed on the brakes in front of you. It's the feeling of deceleration, which is outrageous, unbelievable. And you think of what that does to the human body. You know, we're not typically designed for our bodies that speed to that stop. So you know, it's an outrageous feeling. You've seen some videos of a double seater Formula One car and what the person in the back who isn't exposed and experienced to this sort of G and feeling like, and you see them moving around all over the place. So luckily, you know, it's also why we're training our neck quite a lot. We're training our core, because at the end of the day, everything is aligned and everything is connected. So it's knowing how to brace yourself correctly, knowing, you know, how to, you know, position yourself in the car so that you're not uncomfortable every time you're smacking that brake pedal.
Something me and Katie, who presents this podcast with me, talk about a lot is the fact that we, as mere mortals, will never drive F1 cars, but you guys do, which is wonderful. But when I have had a I've been lucky enough to have a passenger lap a few times on the F1 circuits driven by racing drivers in some quick supercar. And the braking to me always feels like being pushed really hard in the back. You know, like when you're being stopped and it's like pushing. Am I getting anywhere near close with the F1 experience?
The thing is, when you're in that F1 experience car, you have a seatbelt. You're in a seat.
So you're probably more still than I was, really.
We're 10 times more still because we're also in a seat that is molded to us.
Of course.
So you almost feel like, you know, a part of just being like jolted from the back and pushed forward. You know, that sensation, that load that is being endured by the Formula One car, you know, which the front wing and up sometimes have up to 3 ton of load, you know, let alone. So we're getting all of that combined, you know, it's not just a free load feeling of your body. You're getting the sensation of the car also being sucked to the ground as it does. You know, we're only talking about a few millimeter of ride height here, but the genuine force that is being put on the car to squeeze. Yeah, all the limits of four corners of the car is obviously, you know, excruciating on the car, but also on the body.
And a car brake pedal is so easy in terms of a road car. It's, you know, it's a really smooth push. I'm guessing a Formula One car brake pedal must feel very different to that.
Yeah, no, it's the sort of give. And when I say give, I mean it's on the point you push the brake pedal in your road car to the period where you're, you know, at the max and you can feel it stiff is maybe over the point of 10 centimeters, you could probably say 7 to 10 centimeters. When we're talking braking and the pedal and the, you know, the margin between, you know, the first touch on the pedal to it being at max, we're talking maybe a centimeter or a centimeter and a half.
So it's a tiny movement.
It's a
really
very tiny movement, but it's very, very stiff, and it needs to be because you need to feel that in your foot, that you are making sure that you're hitting that pedal as hard as you can.
You've just touched on it. Are you pushing with as much force as you physically can?
At times, for sure, but you know, it also does change from team to team, from car to car. You don't always want to be pushing the brake pedal as hard as you can, otherwise you're going to come to a full stop in corners that you won't want to. But in order to, you know, maximize your stopping performance and stopping power at a corner like we're here in Bahrain at the moment, we're at turn one, where you're coming from top speed into a second gear, 180 degrees corner, you're braking just after the 100 meter board, you want to be pushing that brake pedal as hard as you can to make sure you're stopping the car at most efficiently when it's at its highest speed, because not only does that mean, you know, you're stopping it well, but you're also stopping the car when there is the most amount of load on all parts of the aerodynamics.
And it's left foot braking in Formula One.
Does left that mean, foot braking, yes.
And does that mean you have to train that leg more than the right? Is it going through more force than the right, we know how much work you guys do in the gym, is it equal between left and right?
You know, obviously, it probably comes down to as well, as a driver, as a person, what your dominant leg is. You know, for me, I always kick the footy with my right foot. I always, you know, on a scooter, on a skateboard, on a surfboard, I put my right foot at the back. That was always my main leg. So my left leg has never been my hand riding, football kicking, obviously side, but it has always been, since I've been a 3-year-old, the foot that I've broke with, that I've stopped the car, that I've put most endurance with. So I've never had to, I could say, you know, dedicate more time onto the left side of my body. It's always been something that's been natural for me. But I think equal load, you know, you're also at full throttle pushing that pedal. It's a different feeling between two legs, because we are obviously always working with our right foot. Although it's not at a high percentage, it's a, you know, for a constant period of time, which does do some sort of endurance. You know, it's like lifting a 2 kg dumbbell or 3 kg dumbbell, but for an hour instead of a 20 kg dumbbell for 5 or 10 seconds of a rep. So different things can strengthen your muscles in different ways.
And I'm curious as to the when a Formula One car locks its brakes, it's effectively the back wheels stopping almost.
Or front,
of course, and you see those wheels skid along the tarmac, and you often hear the commentators say they sort of turn the time into a 50 pence coin or something like that, or a shaped coin if you're listening away from the UK. How does that feel when you are physically braking? How does it feel when you've locked the brakes? And is that a case of going in too hard with the brakes at that point when that happens?
You could be braking too late. Typically with the rear of the car locking, we have, you know, the option with our brakes, brake bias, which that dictates how much, when we push that brake pedal, how much of that is going to the front axle of the car or the rear axle. And typically you lock the rears when you are too much, you know, too much to the rear on your brake bias, which is putting too much force onto those rear tires and why it locks. The feeling of when you are locking the rears, you can feel the car deceleration stop. Because, you know, all of a sudden you're sliding on the tire on the rear axle. You feel like you're not stopping. You can also feel the car start to squirm, like you've, you know, ran over some slime and all of a sudden, you know, you're going over some butter. Whereas with the front tires, they typically seem to lock. You know, that could be over a bump, you know, braking hard over a bump. The front tire gets a little bit of, you know, air underneath it, or it goes light and it locks up. Or you've tried to brake too late with too much steering lock on and where the front hasn't been able to give. And there again, you feel the deceleration stop. You can't turn the corner because there's not much contact patch with the ground. So in order to be able to make the corner or try and get the car to turn, you have to fully come off the brake to get the tire to roll again before you can try and make the corner. Whereas if you hold it, you're going to flat spot the tire. Typically, if you are in a race and it's going to destroy the tire, potentially meaning you're going to have to come in and do another pit stop.
And this is all in such a short space of time as well.
You're all in a couple seconds.
And you use that slime or butter analogy on the track. Is that what it feels like when the brakes are too hot or too cold? Or is that a different feeling?
That is a different feeling. When the brakes are too cold, we have carbon brakes in the Formula One car. So they obviously work at temperature. When they are cold, we hit the brake, it can feel the same, but you have no deceleration. So it's just like the hot carbon, you know, blends together with a pad to decelerate the car. But when the carbon is cold, it just slides, it slips. There's no stopping the car. So that's why it's so important in a safety car, a virtual safety car, you know, a cool lap, to make sure you're keeping temperature in the brakes by, you know, speeding up, making sure you're hitting the brakes, creating temperature, or combining the both, because you do not want to be at a safety car restart going down into turn one at Bahrain and have cold carbon fiber brakes, because you're going to be either going into the back of the car in front of you, going into the left wall, or going in, you know, creating carnage. So it's a huge, it's hugely important part to have hot brakes. But then it's important, obviously, to not go over that threshold. Was going over that threshold of your, you know, your brake limit, the brake carbon fiber starts to melt.
Sure.
And we don't want that either. That's why brake cooling and brake ducting is so important in Formula One. We have issues typically of brake overheating in Mexico, where we're at high altitude, temperatures are hot, but you're not getting that amount of air. So yeah, you know, we could speak about brakes and on this topic as well all day. There's so much that goes into it.
Well, that's why we decided to do a whole episode on it, and largely because we'd had so many questions from listeners. You can send yours to f1explains@f1.com. We actually got the same question from John from Edmonton in Canada and Sarah from South Africa. They both want to know what brake balance is and how drivers use it from corner to corner. You touched upon this a little bit earlier, Jack, didn't you? Just explain that a little bit more for us.
So brake balance, you can sort of map that to any tool you want on the steering wheel. You know, typically in the lower formulas of categories in Formula 2, Formula 3 and Formula 4, we have a rotary knob that is connected to the cockpit. We were turning that clockwise and anti-clockwise, but I won't touch on that because we're talking about F1 Explains here. You know, currently in the Formula 1 cars that I'm used to, we have small paddles on the bottom of the steering wheel, one on the right and one on the left. And that is dictating, you know, on the right, the brake balance is going forward, and the left, the brake balance is going rearwards. So when you hit the brake pedal, typically, you know, if your brake balance was, say, at, you know, you could have it 50, you would be giving 50% of your brake balance going to the rear and 50% of your brake balance going to the front. And that meaning both axles are equal. So when you hit the brake, there's the equal amount of force and load going to the front and going to the rear. But, you know, typically maybe at some corners of the track, you want your brake balance to be slightly a few clicks forward, because like we said, we do not want to go into turn one, hit the brake and lock the rear tires, because we're not going to decelerate and we're going to slide. Typically for a, you know, very high, you know, very high loaded braking, a big stopping point, you want to be going 1 to 2 clicks forward on your brake balance to make sure that you're stopping the car efficiently. And if, you know, you are familiar with the Bahrain International Circuit, we have a very tricky corner here, which is turn 9 into turn 10, which is a downhill, long left corner braking, which is very bumpy. So due to this, it is very, very easy to lock the front tires. So coming every lap here in Bahrain, it is crucial that you go at least minimum 1 to 2 clicks, which I mean, you know, on that left paddle, pressing that twice, which is typically 0.5% to 1% of brake balance. So I know Fernando, when he was here, he was using 0.5% increments, whereas Esteban and Pierre, they use 1% increments. So it just depends on how much you're feeling and how you want to go. Typically, 1 to 2% rearwards in for that turn 9 and turn 10 corner to ensure that you don't lock the front tyres, because it is so easy to do over the bumps there.
And just finally, Jack, we often hear a term used in F1 called racecraft, which effectively means, you know, the skills the drivers use when they're racing. How do you decide on a braking technique and braking points, where to brake, how you're going to brake for corners, like you just said, that really tricky corner at Bahrain where you have to brake downhill whilst moving the car to the left? How do you work all that out?
You know, we spend obviously a lot of time in the simulator as well. So, you know, if you're new to Formula One, if you haven't, you know, drove the car before, if you're coming in as a rookie, you haven't drove the Bahrain circuit, you'd be watching onboards of pole laps before, of footage. But you're also going to be looking at, okay, we know turn 9 and turn 10 is very bumpy. We want to be looking at what is going to be the ideal line to make braking as straight as possible, because braking straight, we're going to be able to make the braking most efficient, because we're going to be able to hit the pedal as hard as we want without locking up. We're going to typically stay about 1.5 meters to the right of those bumps, because we don't want the left-hand side of that car going over the bumps, which can induce front locking. And we also want to be able to open up the corner as much as we can to make sure that we're getting the rotation at the right point to get on throttle, you know, as soon as we can, because we also know that after turn 9 and 10, we have a long straight and a potential overtaking zone within DRS down towards turn 11. So you're taking everything into account. You're not looking at, okay, what is just going to be the fastest way around this corner, because there's other factors. There is, you know, also environmental, whether that's wind, there is structural, whether that's the bumps. There's a lot of things that come into actually how you're going to attack this corner, and that does change, and it can change, you know, from AM to PM sessions, from, you know, hot to cold, and from high winds to low winds.
Jack, we really appreciate you coming on, and I'm fortunate enough to have spoken to every driver on the current F1 grid, plenty of other people throughout the F1 world as well. You're one of the very best at explaining how it feels to drive an F1 car and to all the variables in it. I'm convinced that when you've finished, you know, your long racing career ahead of you, you'll probably take my job on a podcast like this, because you're very good at it, Jack.
Just learning from the best. Luckily, I spend my days with you, which helps a lot.
You could come back on. That's flattery will get you everywhere. Jack Doohan, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming back on F1 Explained.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Well, I sure am glad we took Jack's word and not our word, Christian, because that sounds brutal to go through the braking system in an F1 car. 5G of force on your body. So imagine your head weighs 5 times more than normal. You really do need that Alex Rossi strong neck at that moment. And that is from one of our OG podcasts way long ago in 2023, if you want to know what that reference is all about. But an interesting bit of physics, under heavy braking at 5G, the driver's left leg also weighs 5 times more than usual, and that helps them generate the huge amount of pressure they need to put on the brake pedal. So it really is this amazing mix of science and physics, and I'm blown away at how it works. It really is fascinating. Thank you, everybody, for asking about the brakes. I think it's really cool.
It's so cool. We love covering these topics like brakes, and it's also a great example that we wouldn't have done this episode without your emails. Like, you guys tell us what to do and we go and do it. So if you have a question on anything F1 related, however big or small, send it in. We'll find someone to answer to it. You heard from all the guys at the start of the episode. If we hadn't had heard from them, you wouldn't have just listened to this podcast. So what do you want us to talk about? F1explains@f1.com. Write it in an email or send it in a voice note.
Yeah, the only thing, you know what, Christian, I want to go back to brakes for a moment because I'm still blown away by this. I imagine, okay, in the United States, we have state fairs. Okay, bear with me. Go along on this journey with me.
It's like a county show in the UK, yeah.
Okay. And they have these terrible, horrible rides. They're set up, they're scary. You get on them and you hope you survive them, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, bear with me. There is one that, if you've been to the Indiana State Fair, any listeners, you'll know there is a spaceship in the carnival area of the state fair. And you spin in circles, and you eventually lay down. And you literally... you're down now with the G-forces, right?
Yeah.
And you cannot lift your body up. that is what I imagine it's like to hit the brakes. And you just can't. There's something about the spaceship at the carnival, at the state fair, and Formula One brakes that go hand in hand. Please join us on F1 Explains at F1.com and let me know if you think that too. I would love to know if I'm the only one who actually thinks this or not.
We're going slightly off topic, but we're nearly at the end. It's fine. I think I went on one of those exact rides in Lincoln in the UK. Got a lovely cathedral if you ever want to go.
Okay.
I think I went on exactly the same sort of ride. Yeah, and that does feel quite harsh when you're slowing. I mean, listen, us mere mortals, as we always say on this podcast, Katie, will never drive F1 cars. These are the experiences we have to sort of relate them to. That's as close as we're going to get.
The spaceship at the Indiana State Fair. Similar to braking in an F1 car. I have no idea. That there's no science, no physics backing that, but that is what I envision the feeling to be like. Anyways, I'd like to say, Christian and I would like to say a hello to the following F1 Explained listeners who have emailed us recently. We have Peter from Scottsdale, Arizona, Kate with a C from Sweden, Leah from France, Jim from Mayer, Minnesota, Shanna in North Carolina, and Yorgos from Athens, Greece, who is a fan of Bolton Wanderers, the British football soccer team Christian used to cover as reporter. And their Greek player, oh, come on.
Normally it's me that can't pronounce
okay.
things, but I'm going to, go on, have a go. So this is a Greek Bolton Wanderers soccer player. Go on,
Katie. I have never seen commentating on this, so I'm giving this a whirl. Stelios Giannakopoulos.
No. He gave him some tea, but he doesn't have it at the end there. Stelios Giannakopoulos.
Hold on. Once more.
Stelios Giannakopoulos.
Well, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm glad that he is.
Yeah. Our listeners, you're always listening, you guys, because I mentioned Bolton Wanderers very fleetingly in a reference a few weeks ago. And Yorgos from Athens is like, yeah, I follow them. Excellent. I love going to European places, by the way, and finding people who follow obscure English soccer teams. Good stuff. I didn't ever, when we started this podcast and we broadcast it all over the world, I didn't think we'd be talking about Bolton Wanderers, and particularly not Stelios Giannakopoulos, who I used to watch play. I'm sure I've seen him play live at Leicester City matches in the 2000s, but there we are. Wonderful. I love the many strange directions this podcast goes. Sorry if we haven't been able to give you a shout out or answered your question yet. We've got so many to get through, but we will get through them. Send those emails and voice notes to f1explains@f1.com.
Yeah, and tell a friend about the show. Help us grow. Help us spread F1 Explains all over the world. We've already heard a few different stories about that, and we look forward to telling some of those stories here in future episodes as well. But you can also listen to the other F1 podcasts to continue to grow your knowledge in F1, F1 Beyond the Grid, and F1 Nation.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm off to watch some of the best goals of Stelios Giannakopoulos playing for Bolton Wanderers. Until next time, bye for now.
Goodbye.